Well, we are in chapter 20 of Exodus in our 23rd message in the series, as we finally came to Mount Sinai and the Ten Commandments. Now you say, wait a minute, I know about the Ten Commandments. I think I can give three or four of them and can share that. But you know, some people talk about the law, talk about the commandments and say, boy, that is really wonderful that God gave these commandments, a code to live by, barriers to stop us from our own sinfulness, and that we can rejoice in the Lord. Remember, I grew up Jewish, and we have a whole feast day at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles that is celebrating the giving of Torah, and it's like Mardi Gras. It's not a feast day where, like, you fast and you pray and you go to church to synagogue or whatever, but it's a time of partying. They rejoice that God gave the law, a way that they can live correctly in a very evil world. But, of course, the negative look at the Ten Commandments is from anybody who's ever tried to keep them, because we all fail. If I'm going to please God and try to see the commandments as rungs on a ladder that I'm going to get close to God, or I'm going to get into heaven by keeping the Ten Commandments, I am doomed. Nightline founder Ted Koppel from the TV networks said that our society finds truth too strong a medicine to digest undiluted. And then he looked in the camera and said, but Moses brought down 10 commandments, not 10 suggestions. And these are commandments that tell us how we're supposed to live. And they're not easy to follow. I'm reminded of the story of the rabbi who was a friend of mine here in Casper. And he went to a dinner, and the lady at the dinner was talking about her family that had helped settle Casper, Wyoming back, 100 and some years ago. And that their ancestors had all come over on the Mayflower, and that she was a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. And she said, my great-great-great-grandfather was there when they were signing the Constitution. And the rabbi looked at her and said, well, my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was there when God gave the Ten Commandments. trying to kind of one-up a little bit there in that. Teresa and I decided early in our marriage that we would keep the Ten Commandments. And now after 47 years, we're doing really well. I've kept four, she's kept six, so we're right at the 10 now, I think, that we're doing pretty good. And we tried to teach our children to live by the principles of them, that these are good truths that we're supposed to live by. And the kids were fussing over toys and sharing, and you know how children are. We had two boys and life was fine. Then we had a girl. And it became, oh, she touched me. And then from her, he's looking at me funny. And we, get to arguing back and forth. And I said, now, children, when it talks about how we treat each other, which one of the Ten Commandments should we follow? And without missing a beat, my son said, thou shalt not kill. That's the only one that seemed to relate to them. Well, we don't want to make light of the commandments, but today we're going to do an overview of the Ten Commandments, and then starting next Sunday, Lord willing, begin with Commandment 1 and do some in-depth study of what God is saying here. And so we want to look at the historical understanding. Now, before you turn to Exodus 20, where we're going to look in just a minute, obviously, if we're going to look at the historical context, we have to start in Genesis, back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, because the law begins at creation and it continues because God put the law in man's heart. He didn't spring something new here in Exodus 20 to the Jews in 1446 BC. This isn't something new. This was started at creation. God had set down rules. He set down laws. He said, this is the way it's going to be. Now, it started out really good, just like most laws. You start out with one law. That's it. One thing. Genesis 1:28. Okay, you there? We're going to be looking at a lot of verses today, so you need a Bible. Genesis 1:28. Yeah, that's kind of pretty much the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1, so you can find it. God blessed them, Adam and Eve. God said to them, this is a command, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish and the birds and every other living thing. That's what you're supposed to do. The one negative thing he said is in chapter 2, verse 15. If you turn the page, Genesis 2, 15, the Lord God took the man, put him in a garden in Eden to work it and keep it. And the Lord said, you can eat, surely eat of every tree in the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you'll not eat. The day you eat it, you will literally begin dying. Because they were going to live forever. So, you know, God said, it's just as simple. I'm making this. I'm putting you in a garden. I've given you a command. You know, just take care of everything around you. Be cool. Just don't eat of the one fruit. So what does a child do when you tell them you can't do something? Don't eat it. Don't touch it. It becomes almost a magnet that you've got to touch it. You've got to eat it. You've got to disobey. Now, Adam had the choice. He was just created kind of what we would think of as neutral. And God says, okay, this is it. One law. That's it. Don't need 10 commandments. Just do one. Just obey me. Don't eat the fruit. Chapter 3 in Genesis. I told you we're going to go through Genesis a little bit here. Chapter 3, beginning of the first verse. The serpent was craftier than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. The serpent is now filled with Satan's voice, said to the woman, did God actually say you shouldn't eat of any tree in the garden? The woman replied, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, except God said, don't eat of the fruit of the tree that's in the center of the garden. Don't even touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you won't die. For God knows when you eat it, your eyes will be open. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So the woman saw the tree, that it was good for food. It was delight to the eye, desirous to make one wise. So she took the fruit and ate it, and then gave it to her husband, who was with her, and he ate. So, one law, and what does man do?
Breaks it.
Yeah, breaks it. Pretty simple. What happens when you break the law? Well, you get in trouble, yeah. In this, if you look at Ezekiel 18:20 in the prophets, it says the soul that sins shall die. Okay? So, God made a law. Man breaks it. Now, is it a bad law? Don't touch the fruit or don't eat the fruit in the tree. It's no big deal. But it had capital punishment. This wasn't rape or murder or kidnapping or something like that. It was just one law that said it's worse than a felony. It's worthy of death. Because the law violated shows the condition of the heart, that the heart's rebellious against God. And you're going to start to die. And Adam and Eve, literally, he said, dying, you will die. They began at that point from a perfect body that could have lived in Eden and had children and lived there. And we'd all be living there happy ever after now. When I get to heaven, I'm going to chit-chat a little bit with Adam and Eve. I'm going to ask Eve, why would she do this? Then I'm going to slap Adam upside the head and say, why would you listen to your wife and take it? Why didn't you just say, God, give me a new wife? I got extra ribs here, you know, make another woman here. This woman sinned. Get rid of her and give me a new one. No, I won't really do that. But God said, okay, there's laws now. not just the law to obey me, which is a heart condition, but a bunch of rules that you're going to have to do. And so Genesis begins to build from creation story that we just finished into the book of Genesis, where in the heart of man, all sorts of laws, the rules that God gave, began to be part of life. 2 Corinthians 2:3 says that these are not written down in stone, but written in the heart. Man knows what's right and wrong. You can ask a child today, should you kill someone? And if they've been not brainwashed too badly, they will say, no, you shouldn't kill. Is it right to steal? Well, it's okay to steal if you don't get caught. We have missionaries that were working in Iran, it was oil field workers that were there in Iran, the Long family that Jason just passed away a couple years ago. They were living in Iran, and they said they had some tools out in the shed, and they kept the shed locked, and one day they heard a bunch of noise and went out there, and a fellow was ripping the lock and the hasp of the lock off of the shed and grabbing a bunch of tools to walk away. And Jason said to him, he said, hey, what are you doing? You can't steal. And he looked and he said, oh, I'm sorry, and put him back. And he said, you know, if you don't get caught, it isn't a problem. That's Islam. That's their religious belief. But God's in the heart, you know, it's there. The Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, wasn't just something new at Mount Sinai. This was in the hearts of men. For thousands of years, from now Adam and Eve all the way down now to the Jews who are out here leaving Egypt and 3 months later are now at Mount Sinai, as we've been looking for the last 5 months of sermons there. Let me share some examples. Now, there's a bunch of references I've given to you in your notes here under Genesis that refer to what God is doing. But I'm just going to kind of summarize them for you quickly. You can go back and look at each one because they're really cool stories. In Genesis chapter 35, verse 2, they were told to get rid of the foreign gods, that there was just one God. Well, that's first commandments. In Genesis 31:39, Laban said to Jacob, why did you steal my idols? Because he had made a bunch of carved gods. That's commandment number 2. Don't make any carved gods, images, and worship them. In Genesis 24, we read in verse 3, they were saying, I want you to swear by the Lord that this is a true saying. You're not cussing and using God's name in vain, but you're swearing by him that this is the truth. Commandment 3. Back in Genesis 2, at the creation story, it says he blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Remember the Sabbath. Commandment 4. In Genesis 27, when Abraham was dying, Isaac and Ishmael, his two sons, gathered together and said, our days of mourning for our father are near because he's going to die. We honor our father and mother. Okay, commandment 4, or commandment 5, excuse me. When Cain's sacrifice was not approved and Abel's blood sacrifice was, Cain was angry back in Genesis 4 and killed Abel. And God stopped Cain and said, where's your brother? Not that God didn't know. God was trying to point out, thou shalt not kill, commandment 6. Later in Genesis 39, Joseph was a prisoner, and remember he was taken from Israel down to Egypt, and he was put in charge of a household, and his master's wife, Potiphar's wife, tried to seduce him. And Joseph ran away and said, how can I do this? You're another man's wife. Thou shalt not commit adultery. In chapter 44, the cup of silver was put in the bag of the Jews, and Joseph stopped them and said, why have you stolen my silver cup? In chapter 39, back to that story of Potiphar's wife, she lied. She said, oh, he came near me and tried to rape me, and it wasn't my fault, it's his. Throw him in jail, and his boss did. But she bore false witness. You see what I'm saying? In covetous, Abraham took his wife down to Egypt with him, and Pharaoh tried to make her part of his harem. And God said, you're as good as dead for taking another man's wife. You know, thou shalt not covet. You can look through the book of Genesis, way before the Ten Commandments, and see that in the hearts of people, they all knew the Ten Commandments. They all knew that it wasn't right to covet, and it wasn't right to lie, and it wasn't right to profane God's name or worship idols. That they all knew that. They just chose to disregard it. So that's the initiation where the law began. It started as one law, and now it's in the hearts of man, and it's building and eventually codified in what we think of as the Ten Commandments. Now we're in Exodus 20, if you want to turn there. Because in Exodus 20, we have a documentation of what God said in his laws. He gives the Ten Commandments. He gives three positive statements, and the rest are all negative prohibitions. And we'll emphasize this in each of our sermons, where he starts out positive and then says, oh, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Notice with me in Exodus chapter 20, God spoke these words, verse 1. Verse 2, I am the Lord God. I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Positive statement. I am God, therefore what? Commandment 1, do not have any other gods before me. Commandment 2, don't make carved images and worship them. Commandment 3, don't take my name in vain. So right away you see the positive. I am God. Know this. And then the prohibitions there about our worship, because this is the way that the law is broken down, the commandments about worship. Then in verse 8, he starts out with another positive. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And then he goes on and says, don't do this and this and this about the Sabbath day. Don't work on it. Don't profane that. Commandment 4. The laws about work. And then the laws about our walk are the rest of the commandments from verse 12 through 17. Positively, he starts out, honor your father and mother. Give them honor. And then he says, okay, you're going to give honor to your father, your mother, to others. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. And don't covet. The list them right on out. The laws about our walk, our worship, our work, our walk. It's a very simple way to divide up the Ten Commandments here as God codifies them. Because this is what it's all about. Ancient covenants were an agreement between a king and its people, or a conquering military general and the nation that they conquered. They made a treaty that this is the way it's supposed to be. Suzerainty is the historical term. Remember, I'm a history major, so I throw in things like that just to show you. That's a type of covenant that it is, a treaty that it is. The king will treat you well. You submit and are be loyal to him. He has XYZ obligations to you as a people. You have ABC obligations to him as your authority. It isn't to make them good or bad. It's just to have a good relationship. They've already been conquered, right? The king is already in charge. He could just kill them all. And sometimes he did. But it was clear terms. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 33 and 34, he says at the end of the wanderings of 40 years there, he said, did a people ever hear the voice of God speaking to them? You know, nobody's ever heard that. Did they see God in the midst of fire, as you have seen and heard? Has any God ever attempted to go and take a nation from himself and rescue it from another nation by trial, signs, wonders, and war? By a mighty hand and outstretched arm, by great deeds of terror, the Lord did this for you. So God is saying, you have an obligation. God says, this is the covenant. This is the treaty I'm making with you. Three positive, the rest a bunch of prohibitions. Don't, you know, this is how you're supposed to live. And we'll all be happy. It'll all work out to the best. You will be holy, because the ultimate motivation for the law was to make man have a personal relationship with God, not an abstract code of conduct. Don't think of the law as we have to do this or not do that, but it's to have a good relationship. Now, we have all sorts of laws in Casper, Wyoming. Every city does. We have laws that say you can't tear up the street in front of somebody's house before 8 in the morning. Okay? By the way, just let you know, Friday at 8:01, the jackhammers went. And we're all looking around. I'm having breakfast, and I'm going, what in the world? It sounds like a machine gun outside. What is happening? Well, school's going to start, and we live by the school, so they're tearing up all the streets because that's what the city does. Wait until the school's going to start and then tear everything up so that there'll be a traffic mess. There are laws. Laws that say you can only go 35 miles an hour in front of my house, except if there's a little warning light, because did I tell you we live near a school? And there's a little yellow flashing light, and if that comes on, what does the law change to?
20.
20. You all know that, 20. If you don't know that, you will know that, because about one block into that, there's a little blue car sitting there with the, you know, red, white, and blue are very patriotic unless they're in your rearview mirror. They get the flashing lights and they'll stop people and they'll be out in force on Tuesday as school begins. Just mark it down. We should fear God. We should want to obey Him, but laws should just make us live better. It's not that we should live in fear. It's that we should say, okay, I'm willing to, if I'm a citizen, I'll pay my tax, I'll obey the laws, with the speed limits or whatever it might be. He's saying, you should. And by the way, the word, you should, in the commandments that we think of, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not. I see the word thou, and I'm thinking, well, that must mean everybody. He's given these commandments and it's plural. You all don't do this. You all don't do that. No, they're all singular. If you learn one thing today, the Ten Commandments are all singular, not plural. You, individual, each one responsible to adopt this covenant and obey it. So, law starts out with one law. By the end of Genesis, it's full of laws. By Exodus, they codify them into Ten Commandments. And by the way, for a bunch of chapters more, somebody said, are you going to be done after Exodus 20? Well, if you start going into Exodus 21 and so forth, you're going to find more and more and more commandments that are listed there. We're going to stop. Well, we're going to kind of summarize the rest of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy in a few messages. But we're basically going to, functioning from Egypt to Sinai with this series of messages. It's easier for God to abridge, to reduce the law down to a few prohibitions rather than number all the positive freedoms that we have under the law. Think about this with me for a minute, because this is a great principle. God could have taken Adam and Eve by the hand and walked around the garden and said, Adam, this is an apple tree, okay? It's a Macintosh apple tree. Next to it's a Granny Smith, and over here is a Gala, or whatever they had back in those days, a Red Delicious or whatever. These are all apple trees. You understand? You can eat any of them. And then he walks in the garden a little further with Adam, and he says, Adam, these are pear trees. These are Bartlett pears. And the next trees are, what's the next kind of pear? Banjo or something like that? Danju pears. And you could have gone through all those and said, now you can eat these, you can eat these, you can eat these. And then start with the peaches. Can you imagine how long the book of Genesis would be? God could have said, you've got all these blessings. So God just summarized and said, you can eat any of the trees, but just don't eat from one. Negative. See, isn't that the way God is? Isn't that the way the Bible is? Always down on you. Always negative. Well, it's just a quick, brief abridgment or summary here. Satan took that one prohibition and uses it to create suspicion that God is negative and that God's mean. Have you ever heard that? The God of the Old Testament's a mean God and that he's got all these rules and, oh, it's terrible to live on. Jesus just says, love everybody and don't matter about anything and there's nothing else important. So Satan's trying to get Adam and Eve to sin, hoping to divert their attention away from God's grace to the few rules that he has. In 1 Timothy, Paul says in the last days, in chapter 4, in the last days, many will depart from their faith, devoting them to deceive, to teach the doctrines of demons through the insincerity of liars. That's what we're having today. We're having preachers who are saying, oh, don't focus on the negative. This last week, on August 31st, the Nashville statement on sexuality and marriage came out. It was signed by hundreds of big name preachers and teachers. This statement is, it says, you know, God said that marriage is between a man and a woman. And we affirm that. And we deny that you can just anybody, you know, if you want to, you can have a man marry a man or a woman marry a toaster or whatever the society comes up with today. And it goes on. It's got this, it's called the Nashville Statement. It's worth looking up online because everything in it is, it says there's two genders. God created male and female. If you got any question, check your DNA. You're either male or you're female. Either X, Y, or YZ or something. I don't, you know, I'm a preacher. I don't understand all the genetics like that. I just got my DNA results. It shows me that I'm Jewish, so I'm just really thrilled with that. I'm just glad Hitler's not in power yet. But the idea here, you know, God makes us all clear. But society says, oh, no, it's different. Because society wants to divert our attention off of the absolutes. This is what God says. And make them look negative, make them look bad. Oh, we're hurting those poor lesbian, gay, bisexual, transvestite, gender, LBG. Have you seen all the initials on that? I'm not going to go there. Well, I did go there. But, you know, that's what Satan wants to do. Now, Jesus gives the Cliff Notes version. He gives, y'all know what Cliff Notes are, right? The little summarized. He gives a version because the law started out with one, grew into a bunch, then it's codified into a bunch more. And then, of course, the Jews in the New Testament in Matthew 22, 37 through 40, we're going to look at next year, Matthew 22, the Jews say, which commandment is more important than any other? You know, we got to get these things prioritized, Jesus. They're trying to trick him. They're trying to make him look like he's breaking the law so they can kill him. Because Jews could do that. And Jesus said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. This is the foremost commandment. And the second is like it. It's equal to it. Love your neighbors as you love yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. The law can be summarized in the single word love. Love God, love others. Now that's positive. Because if you say, I love God, that's exclusive. That means I don't love these idols. I don't love these false gods. I don't love Allah. I don't love Buddha. I don't love Confucius or the Tao. Or I don't love my own bank account, which is the god of many people today. I love God. And I love others like I love myself. Now, folks, I'm going to share something with you. There's just a small group here on this holiday weekend, but I'll share it with you. Don't tell anyone else. I really love myself. I'm wild about me. When I'm alone, I hold my hand sometimes. I mean, I love myself. And I'm supposed to love you like I love myself. Boy, that's hard. That's hard. Ah. The negative implications of love God and love others like you love yourself is that if we are going to shine as lights in the world, we can't be dark. We have to be light. We can't walk in darkness and do all these evil things, because that's what we're supposed to be. If we're supposed to be pure and holy, obviously the negative side is we have to not be impure and unholy. We have to give up that. Let me give you a great illustration. 47 years ago in June, I asked my wife to marry me. Well, actually, about 50 years I asked her to marry me. Finally, I twisted her arm enough. She said yes, and we got married 47 years ago. I promised. We walked down the aisle of the church. Well, she walked down. I was already up there being held by my best man and others so I wouldn't run away. Up in the front of the church. And I saw her walking down, and she sang to me as she walked. Can you imagine a bride doing that? Entreat me not to leave thee, or to, oh, I remember that. And I was nervous, and the preacher said a few words. I don't remember much of anything. But then he said to me, he said, I want you to say these vows, that I will promise to love you. That was pretty easy because I was in love. Oh, man. And I will cherish you for better or worse. And I figure it's only going to get better from here, right? Because we're going to go out and get a motel room. And it's going to be great the rest of our life. Woo, glory. For richer or poorer, we couldn't get much poorer. Trust me. And so I figured, okay, this is it. In sickness and in health, and all I wanted to think about was health. 47 years later, we talk a whole lot more about every organ that's going bad and the troubles and the sickness part. But the pastor said to me, and you will, if you take this woman to be your wife, you vow to forsake all others and take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife. And I could think negatively, what does this mean? I no longer can be with Betty or Sarah or Carol or Susie or Joan or Barbara Ann, or help me, Rhonda, help me. I know the Beach Boys are floating through my mind here. Help me. Or I could think positively about this. Oh, I can take Teresa to be my wife. So I've got a choice. Some of you are thinking, you chose poorly. I could have gone on, and I granted the ceremony lasted a little while I was thinking of all these people, and the pastor said, do you promise to forsake all others? And I looked her in the eye, and I, holding her hands, because the pastor wanted us to face each other and hold her hands, and I committed, yeah, because the positive truth far outweighed the negative. I get to spend the rest of my life with Teresa. I had no idea what a blessing that would be. And I'm going to quit right there before I get mushy and gushy here. Oh, yeah, now you say amen. Now you want me to keep preaching. Yeah, okay. The few negatives of those vows are far outweighed by the positive. And that's the way it is with the Ten Commandments. Don't say, oh, well, look at, I can't do that. I can't kill. But think of the 6.7 billion people on earth you don't have to kill. You get to love. You get to be a testimony of God's grace to. Now, the second part of the message is short, so bear with me here, because I want us to say this is, because this is the overview of the law. One commandment into a whole bunch, codified into a whole bunch more, and then summarized in the Cliff Notes as love God and love each other, and you'll be cool. So, I thought to myself, okay, how am I going to apply this here? How do I find myself today under the law? Well, I have to look at the reasons here. The law shows me that God is holy and Bob isn't. I know that probably comes as a shock to you as well. God is holy and you're not. Deuteronomy 5:24, behold, the Lord our God has shown us his glory and greatness as we heard his voice out of the fire from the mountain. That day we've seen God speak with man and live. Romans 7:12-13, if it had not been for the law, I wouldn't know that I was a sinner. But the law is holy. The commandments are good and righteous and holy. Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy 1:9, the law is not laid down for the just, but for the lawless, the disobedient, the ungodly, the sinners, the unholy, the profane. It's there for our good. We should look at the laws of God as a great blessing. And James chapter 1 says to be doers of the word. Don't just hear them. I can remember teaching our children the Ten Commandments. Did any of you ever have to memorize the Ten Commandments? I had to memorize those. Part of my life, and then teaching our children, you memorize these things. God says, I want you to do them and not just memorize them, not just spew off a list of this is what you should do and shouldn't do, but obey them. Psalm 147:19 says, he decrees his statutes and law to Israel. He's not dealt with any other nation, for they have not known his law. This marks Israel as a special place. In Ephesians 2:14, he says, for he himself, Jesus, is our peace, made us one, the Jews and the Gentiles, broken down in the flesh the wall of hostility, abolishing the commandments. We don't have to go through and fear every day of our life that we're going to say or do something wrong and we'll be stoned to death. That are the commandments expressed in the law, that he might create himself a new one, new man in place of two, making peace and reconciliation to us before God. You see, that's what God has done. Now, a few more verses in Galatians picks up on this and the freedom that we have. In Galatians, in the New Testament, chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, reads, as many as are the works of the are of the works of the law are under a curse, for it's written, cursed is everyone who doesn't abide in everything written in the book of the law to perform them. Paul stops and says, now no one is justified by the law. No one can get to heaven by keeping all the law. Number one, it's because no one can keep all the law. But number two, that we don't get to heaven by works, it's by God's grace. So he says, now no one is justified by the law before God, for it's evident, for the righteous lives by faith. That's God's grace here. The law is not of faith. On the contrary, he who practices the law will live, and the implication is, and die by them. So many people, if you ask them, are you going to heaven? They'll say, well, I do good. I keep the golden rule. I keep the Ten Commandments. Have you heard that? You know, I do good things. Yeah. If you try and get to heaven by the law, you know, there's a word for that. A little picture that comes to mind, that just a big L for loser. You're not going to do it. You're gonna fail. Galatians chapter 4 picks us up in verse 9. He says, you've come to know God, or really be known by God. How can you turn back to the weak and worthless elemental things that enslaved you? He said, don't try and follow a bunch of laws. You're not going to do it. Galatians 5, verse 18, he keeps hammering this point to the people there in what would be central Turkey today. He says, if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. We're not under law, Romans 6 says, but under grace. So our salvation and our relationship with God doesn't come by trying to keep the Ten Commandments. We can't earn heaven by doing good, because there's none that do good. No, not one. Salvation is always by grace. The new covenant is a covenant of grace that was the old covenant that God saved Adam and Eve by, and Abraham by, and Moses by, not keeping a bunch of rules, but by God's grace alone. Listen, when Israel failed or broke a law, and they did, it wasn't just a matter of violating a minute rule, but it was a result of unbelief in their heart. When people say, well, I try to keep all these laws, I try and do good, but ask them if they fail. And if they fail, it's because they don't believe God. They don't have faith. They don't understand that salvation comes by grace. Psalm 78 says, therefore the Lord heard and was full of wrath. A fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger mounted against Israel because they did not believe God or trust him for salvation. That's a psalmist evaluation. And by the way, Psalm 78 is talking about the Jews after Sinai as they wandered and didn't believe God in the wilderness. Hosea 6:6-7 says, I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, in the knowledge of God more than in animal offerings. But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. They've dealt treacherously against me. And then most famously, in Micah 6:6-8, Micah the prophet says, with what should I come to the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Should I come to him with burnt offerings? With yearling calves? Does the Lord take delight if I offer 1,000 goats or 10,000 barrels of oil? Should I present my firstborn as a sacrifice for my rebellious acts? Then he says, no, oh man, I've told you what is good and what the Lord requires: to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Salvation doesn't come through keeping the Ten Commandments or through any law. It comes through Jesus, and that's why the law, the commandments, all of what we've seen in Exodus thus far and will see in the messages to come, should point us to the Savior, not to Sinai. Because Mount Sinai condemns, it doesn't save. It shows us we're sinners, it shows us we failed, not that there is a salvation. Paul summarizes it in Colossians 2, verses 13 and 14. He says to them, you who were dead in your sin, God made alive, having forgiven our trespasses, canceling out the record of debt that stood against us with its demands. He set it aside and nailed it to the cross. A dear older lady in a previous church was an artist, and she came up to me and said, I want to paint a picture of the cross. And she said, I don't want to focus on Jesus hanging there on the cross, but I want to have something that shows what he did for us. And so I suggested that she draw this painting of a cross with the nails on it, maybe a little shadowy look of a body, but you can't really tell, because that's not what we worship. But the blood dripping down, and I said, and at the bottom of it, under the feet, put the Ten Commandments, but have the blood dripping over them so that it washes them away, so that it covers up our violation of the Ten Commandments. Because the soul that sinned should die. But Christ's blood, he took those commandments and nailed them to the cross, and his blood covers them all. Can we keep all the commandments? No, we can't do. Should we? Yes. Should we try? You say, well, I'm not a Jew. I can do what I want. No, these principles were there back in the garden, back through Genesis, way before Sinai. But don't do it to try and change your heart. That's working from the outside in, and that doesn't work. Live loving God, loving each other from the inside out, from a changed heart where God saves us and gives us a new heart and a new relationship with him. And then live them from the inside out so that we don't need the guidelines to get to heaven, but that we want to live by the guidelines so that we can honor God and rejoice in what he's done for us. This helps us to kind of put an arm around the Ten Commandments for today and see that they still have a part in our life and in our world today, and that we should still live from the inside out, obeying them and following our Lord.